inverse what we said last week on the Rebel Room, and you probably have the tenor of the Rebels' two biggest programs. The Rebels football team falls back, blows a game in Hawaii to lose 35-28, but maybe a little bit of hope on the basketball front. The Rebels look better in their second and third games last week, winning both of them. This is the Rebel Room. No Ray Brewer today, but I'm alongside Mike Romala, and I'm Case Kiefer. UNLV basketball now 2-1. Couple big games this week, Pacific and Southern Utah. Neither gimmies, but it looks like the Rebels are in a little bit of a good spot after playing down some of the anxieties that came out of that season opening loss to Loyola Marymount.
Yeah, they you saw a more cohesive performance, especially against Oakland in the most recent game. It started on the defensive end. They looked like a pretty good defensive team. We're going to have to wait to see how much of that carries over to stronger opponents, but it looks like the pieces are there for them to be a strong defensive team, and that's something that they could not do last year. On the flip side, they're still searching on offense. That hasn't really clicked yet, but you can see the foundation of a good defensive team. So that was nice to see. There's at least something to build on out of that win. It wasn't just sort of like a helter-skelter, hold on for dear life kind of win over Oakland where you take it any way you can get it. It followed some sort of blueprint, followed some sort of plan. So that at least gives you some confidence to build on.
For sure. Offensively, has it still been the problem? We talked about the shooting last week and Ray Brewer being so afraid for the three-point shooting streak. Obviously, we haven't seen that in, but is that still been an area that stood out as the biggest concern with these two games?
Yeah, it is for sure. They made 4 three-pointers against Oakland. The good news is they held Oakland to 4 three-point makes. So, they were even from the three-point line, which is going to be critical for this team. If they can stay somewhat even with opponents from the arc, that gives them a great chance to win. That's still the big question. I was looking up some numbers the other day after the Oakland game. And in terms of points per possession on spot-up jump shots, UNLV is, I think, 338th in the country out of 351. So they're right at the bottom in terms of, how much value they're getting from these jump shots. They're not a jump-shooting team. I wouldn't expect them to, get a lot better as the season goes on. That's still the big concern. But the good news, Shakur Justin played better inside. He gave you 18 points against Oakland. And back at Jiang gave you 12 points. They combined 13 of 21, on the inside. So that's good interior production. Sort of not quite as good, but, somewhat reminiscent of what they got last year with McCoy and Justin down there. So if they can score inside, limit opponents' threes, make a couple of their own, and play great defense, which is what we saw against Oakland, then they've got a chance to, win some games.
And then the Riverside game looks like Bryce Hamilton 3-for-3 from three. I know that was something Brewer was asking about last week. Is that kind of a mirage, or is that something to hang your head on?
That's a hope. You hope that he can make the three-pointers. I consider him to be more of a mid-range type of shooter. I think just mechanically his stroke is a mid-range type of jump shot. But yeah, he's looked more confident as the games have gone on. He wasn't able to carry that performance over against Oakland. It led the team with 16 points against Riverside. Against Oakland the next day, 1 of 3, a couple points. So it wasn't quite the explosive offense from him. But you can see the talent is there, obviously, and he's getting more confident. So it's not going to be 16 points every night, but you're hoping that those nights are more frequent going forward.
Arguably the two games during the week this week, Pacific and Southern Utah, obviously not killers in any right, but looks like a little bit of tougher schedule than last week. Pacific, as I just learned before we were recording, coached by Damon Stoudemire, childhood favorite. I always liked Arizona, and then of course when you're a kid you loved those Raptors jerseys. So
yeah, he was the guy like in NBA Live 98. It's like Damon Stoudemire was the man.
Exactly, and then we got to love Coach Todd Simon at Southern Utah. So they're facing some good coaching minds this week. But like I said, maybe a minor step up in competition from last week. What are the talking points going into this game? What should we look for other than the legendary coaches on the sidelines?
I think it's the competition is a little bit better. I think Pacific is somewhere around like 140 in KenPom. I think Southern Utah is further behind, probably in the 200s somewhere.
That's a step up for Southern Utah, though. I mean, seeing them at the very bottom, they're 3-0.
Yeah, they're usually like 350, 340, mm-hmm. like right at the bottom of Division I. So that is, they are, you know, trending upwards. So it's not the old Southern Utah teams where you can just sort of roll the balls out and destroy them. So, yeah, it is, UNLV's probably going to have to play, not its A game, but they're going to have to play pretty well to win these games. I think you just look at the three-point line. It's can they keep Pacific from making too many? Can they stay, like against Oakland, they stayed even. They only allowed four, and they made four of their own. And Oakland is not able to keep pace inside the arc because UNLV is a bunch of good interior players. They come at you in waves. Can that game plan work against Pacific? I'm not super schooled on the Pacific roster yet. Can UNLV hold them in check behind the arc? Can UNLV hold Southern Utah in check from three-point range? Because I would imagine they'll have the advantage in the paint against both of those teams. So, I want to see the three-point line. And then just for my personal interest, I want to see if the defense can keep that performance going. I thought they played with more intensity in the last game than I've seen in any of Marvin Menzies' teams since he took over at UNLV. They were flying around. They were going after the ball. They were aggressive. They were playing hard defensively for just about every possession. So you could see that vision starting to take shape there. So I want to see if they can carry that over. I'll probably watch that most closely. I want to see if they defend as hard and as aggressively and as effectively as they did in the last game.
What do you think it was that clicked in that game? I mean, that's pretty big praise, saying it's, you know, kind of Menzies' vision, as aggressive as they ever played. What was kind of the catalyst for that?
Well, I think they just have a roster defensively that I think kind of fits together better than it did last year. Like, right, McCoy was top.
Not interested.
Yeah, he's not interested, and the skills weren't there, and you have to sort of plan around that because that's an important position. Now you've got Jiang playing the majority of the minutes there, and he's really good defensively. You've got Joel Ntombwe, who was a surprise starter. I don't know if anyone expected him to play this much, but he's getting big minutes, and he is just—he's got some dog in him. Like, he's the guy that he hits the floor three or four times a game. There was a loose ball against Oakland where, you know, sort of both players are sort of grabbing at it, and the refs blow the whistle, and neither one wants to let go. And Joel Ntombwe rips it away, and then there's a stare down, and I think a technical got called on Jonathan Chamwachachwa in that scrum. So, and Tomboy looks like he's going to be that kind of guy who just brings like an attitude to it. So I think they've got more plus defenders than they did last year or the year before. And Menzies, I think, is making a point of coaching that side of the ball a little bit harder because I think he knows that's where their strength is. Like, if they can become a good defensive team, that gives them a chance to win, even if their offense is not great. So they've got better defensive players. They're committed on that end. Those players are playing really hard, or they did in the last game anyways. So to me, that's the most interesting thing. I want to see if that like can carry over through the rest of non-conference play and how good they match up with Mountain West teams, because we've seen UNLV play well in non-conference before, and then they get into the Mountain West, and it's a different story. So I want to see how well that translates.
Yeah, having not seen the team yet, but just on paper and kind of looking at the pieces they have, I mean, that seems like their route to winning is being that dominant defensive team, that they have the pieces to do that. All the other things we talk about, I mean, they're never going to be a great jump shooting team. They're never going to be a great three-point team. When we keep harping on it, I think it's more just they got to be serviceable in those areas. But maybe the defense is more where they can build their identity.
Exactly. You try to stay even, or at least, you know, be competitive in the areas where that are your weaknesses. If you're not a great jump shooting team, you know, you just try it. You do the best you can to. If the other team hits eight, you try to hit six. You know, you try to stay close. Don't get blown out from the three-point arc like you did against Loyola. You just try to stay close, and then you beat them where your strength is. And that, for this UNLV team, it's only three games, but it's looking like, to me, that's going to be on the defensive end. I think they've got potential to be a good defensive team, maybe even better than good. Maybe they could be really good or top 100, top 50. I don't know. We're going to have to see how it develops. But I think their numbers are pretty good. And just from the eye test, I think they've got good defensive players, or guys who project as good defensive players, depending on how they take coaching and how they adapt as the season goes on. But I think that's where the strength of this team probably ends up, is on the defensive end.
Yeah, and another thing to watch, not to excuse the loss by any means, but, I mean, Ray Brewer was just, like, despondent after it. And, you know, it might just turn out that Loyola Marymount's very good. They've won all three, four games since then. Beat Georgetown, I think, were even worse than they beat UNLV. So it could just turn out that that was a lot tougher first game than it might just look based on the name on paper.
Yeah, I haven't seen them play except for that UNLV game. But, yeah, I'm looking at it right now, 5-0. I saw that they beat Georgetown. Not that Georgetown is a great team. And now they're up to 104 in KenPom. So, I mean, is Loyola Marymount going to finish in the top 100 in the KenPom ratings? I don't know, but, I mean, they're there now. So
yeah,
it's not
I'm
the
not
worst
making them into a
the
top
world.
25 team, just not, you know, saying that, you know, maybe it's one you look back at and the loss is a little more than I think some people wanted to write off the season. As soon as you lose to Loyola and Marymount, it might have been a little bit over.
Yeah, it wasn't like UNLV football and Howard, where lose that first game of the season, you lose to that completely inferior opponent, and it just tells you like that the season is a wash already. It's not like that. It's not quite Howard.
Right. Well, that was a great transition because on Saturday night, it certainly looked like UNLV was playing an inferior opponent for most of the game. They had a big lead going into the fourth quarter against Hawaii. Seemed like the turnaround was about to be complete, a chance for three straight wins to end the season. And then I look, and all of a sudden everything's changed. What did change, Mike? How do you explain this one?
Well, to super simplify it, through the first three quarters, Hawaii's quarterback, Cole McDonald, was terrible, awful. They were open receivers. He couldn't hit them. He missed a couple long touchdowns that were just easy, give me touchdowns that he missed badly. UNLV got lucky there. They got some good breaks. They got a couple interceptions that were poorly thrown, not through good coverage or anything, just, you know, the ball happened to find them. At one point, McDonald had a receiver on a crosser over the middle that the referee stepped in the way of and just screened the receiver, and the receiver never saw the ball coming, and it just zipped by his face. And so stuff like that was happening for three quarters. Just UNLV got lucky on the defensive end. And then Hawaii made the switch to their backup quarterback, who's a true freshman, in the fourth quarter, and he came in. And I didn't think he played exceptionally well, but his passes found their targets, and the luck ran out. And he hit three long touchdowns, and I think he threw five passes. I think it was like four or five for 150 yards, three touchdowns, and that was it. It's like UNLV used up all their luck, and then in the fourth quarter, they couldn't catch a break. Even the ducks were being completed down the field. And offensively, they couldn't get it done. They had two fourth and shorts that they went for, which were both the right decision to go for in those situations. And if they pick up either one of them, they probably win the game, and they got stuffed both times. And that's it. And then you had one final drive with a couple minutes left, down by seven. Tony Sanchez, he started Max Gillum, played him for most of the first half. Armani got a series, and then Armani played most of the second half. And then Sanchez stuck with Armani Roger for that final drive, and he threw three incomplete passes, and that was it.
Yeah, so 35-28. Interesting, I didn't see the game I was following, but the Chevin Cordero, like you said, it was a bunch of blown coverages. He came in, saved the day. Not often you hear, you said you didn't think he played all that well, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but it's just hilarious that he averaged 30.5 yards per attempt.
Yeah, I mean,
leads the comeback, and it might have been more UNLV's ineptitude than anything he did necessarily.
Yeah, he threw the second touchdown pass was nice right in the back of the end zone, right in the hands, but the third touchdown pass was, you know, could have been completed by anyone. Well, maybe not by his predecessor, Cole McDonald, who might have missed that ball, but that was a completely blown coverage. Receivers just running down the field. And then his first touchdown pass was total good fortune. He threw it into a crowd. His receiver came down with it. A couple of UNLV defenders ran into each other, and then the receiver was able to run it into the end zone from there. I don't think the UNLV defense collapsed so much because those guys were open. There were those openings and those bad coverages all game. I mean, they had a receiver playing safety for significant snaps. Drew Techman, they put him back there, and he got an interception early in the game. I think it was on the first or second possession with a bad throw came right to him. So, yeah, I mean, there were just holes all night long. They got lucky. They sort of weathered it. They played well offensively. and to build a big lead. But once Hawaii started clicking, UNLV could not stop them.
You know, last week we really harped on how the whole season was going to come down to Reno. That was going to be such a big game because you want to get the cannon back. And, of course, with all the Tony Sanchez job chatter. So I'm interested to see what or hear what, you know, what do you make of this game in the long run? I think in a way this is almost like the worst case scenario. I know it all still comes down next week, but, you know, UNLV had this lead. Everyone thought they were going to win. Then to blow a game like this, like on social media, I just saw people just, you know, going after Sanchez so much. They were all kind of disillusioned with the program. Again, I think maybe it had to do with those fourth down stops and staying with Armani Rogers, not going back to Max Gillian. But it just seems like this result really turned the tide back very negative again because of the way it went down.
Yeah, it feels like Tony, the people calling for his job sort of quieted down when they won at San Diego State, which it tends to do after you win a big game.
Fair, yeah, correctly, I think.
Yeah, and then, it wasn't just that they lost. It was the way that they lost, and there were so many questionable moves. The fourth down play calling, the decision to stick with Rogers, even though he clearly was not playing well. I think he finished 5 of 15 for 60 yards. His throws were not on target or not close to the target. I wonder how much stock Tony Sanchez puts in this. I think we talked about this last week on the pod, how much stock he put in this game versus the Reno game, and how much, not that you're willing to punt a game ever, but if you wanted to give your team the best chance to win this game, at some point you probably go back to Max Gillum in the fourth quarter when this game becomes close. And they didn't do that. They kept Armani Rogers in, and that makes me wonder, were they viewing this game as an opportunity to get Armani Rogers back into game shape so that he can play the entire way against Reno next week? That's the only sort of way that I can rationalize the decision to keep Rogers in there for so long, even though he was playing so poorly. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe Sanchez said, and then when they were up, 28-13 or in the fourth quarter, he's saying, well, we get the best of both worlds. We're going to win this game, and Armani's going to be ready to go to play Reno next week. And it didn't work out that way. They ended up losing in Hawaii. But, yeah, it was just, there was a lot in this game. It wasn't a routine loss. There was a lot in this game that fans could question and jump on him for. And yeah, at one point it looked like they were going to cruise to a back-to-back road win. And now all of a sudden there's just a string of questionable coaching decisions that fans can jump on. So yeah, it's kind of the worst case scenario.
Yeah, that's certainly what it felt like to me. And I guess the one thing, as much as their season has gone down, the drain. We know they're 3-8. They have one more game left. It's not much on the line except everything on the line, I guess, when it comes to Tony Sanchez. It just certainly feels like he's going to be judged hugely on this game against the Wolfpack on... They play Friday, right? Or Saturday?
Let me double check. Now you got me questioning it.
They put it on Friday one year. Probably not this year. I think it's on Saturday.
Yeah, it's Saturday.
Okay, Saturday. My bad. I remember the one year when they played.
I was like 85% sure it was Saturday until you said that's on Friday, right? Because I know basketball has a game on Friday.
Right.
I would have known if there was like a conflict coming up,
Yeah, well, so Friday, Friday basketball, Saturday at 6:30, UNR at UNLV for the Fremont Cannon. What's the status? Do you feel like going into this? Is this a must win for Tony Sanchez? He going to get another year? I know it's an inexact science, but where do we stand right now?
I think he probably gets another year. Just we've talked about before, just the contract and the money, and he'll have the Armani Rogers out for half the season excuse to sort of play off some of those losses. I think one thing that they can't afford is, I think it was 2 years ago, Reno came in to UNLV. I'm looking for the score right now. And just UNLV just was not competitive that day. Final score was
like 49-20-ish or something. I covered that game.
Yeah, 45-10.
Okay.
That was your season finale.
That was one of the worst performances I had ever seen. They were just awful. They had a lot of injuries, I know, but there was no excuse. That was a really bad Reno team, too, I think, in Polian's final year.
Yeah, yep. And then they and UNLV came in. They had beaten Wyoming in triple overtime a couple weeks earlier, and they were looking to finish the season strong with a and keep the cannon. And Nevada just came in and 45-10, and that game was a wipeout in the first half. That's what Tony Sanchez can't afford here, because if they go out and get completely blown out and outclassed by Reno, then that's, you know, that'll just give a whole new surge to the, you know, the fire Tony Sanchez people and that whole crowd. Last year, 23-16, a little bit closer up in Reno. Again, that UNLV had a chance to win in the final minutes. They were driving down for the tie, and they were either in the red zone or just outside the red zone, and they missed on a fourth down. Something like that, I guess, is, you know, you don't want to lose, but it's acceptable. Just be competitive and play hard. And that's something that I have given Tony Sanchez credit for in the second half. He keeps saying the team is playing hard, even though we're eliminated and even though we're losing, we're playing hard. And I think that's true for the most part. I don't think they've given up in any of these games. So get through this last game. Don't give up at any point. Keep it close. Play hard. If you pull out a win, that's great. It's a great feather in the cap for Sanchez. If they lose, don't make it 45-10, because then he's got some questions to answer, and then his job might really be on the line.
You're right. Hard to argue against that they're still playing hard. I mean, despite the late game meltdown, to be in position to win that Hawaii game, and still, let's not forget, just 2 weeks removed from beating San Diego State, certainly seems like they're playing hard, and I think they will bring their best effort here. I guess my question is, you know, just looking at it on paper, is will it matter? Because we just talked about the last 2 years, especially 2 years ago where they got destroyed. The difference is those were not good Reno teams. They were bad, and Reno seems to have had a little bit of a renaissance this year. 7-4 going into the final game. They've won four straight. I mean, have some close losses to go with that as well. I think they played Boise really tough. It's funny to look back to the beginning of the season where these two teams were really thought of pretty evenly, with UNLV maybe a little bit better. I think I remember the game of the year lines. UNLV was like a 7-point favorite in the spot. Now you look, they're a 13-point underdog. So it's certainly a taller task than it's been the last few years, because the Wolfpack certainly seem to have figured some things out, especially offensively.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, isn't it, it's the same thing as basketball, where it puts Menzies in a tough spot, because in basketball people point to Reno and they say, well, Musselman is in his, what is it, his fourth year or third, and they say, well, they turned it around so quickly, and look at them now. Why is it taking UNLV? Why are we on a five-year plan or a six-year plan with Menzies? And now football is sort of the same thing. Norvell in Reno has got them at 7-4, looking at 8-4. They're already bowl qualified. They're having a fun season, and UNLV is still chugging along, trying to, you know, they're 3-8 going into the final week. So that's it. It's not good for Tony Sanchez when you compare the program to Reno and the way that they've turned it around this year, and they've got a fun team, and it puts him in a tough spot. He's got to win this game. It would have been much better. I mean, obviously, it goes without saying, they had held on to that game in Hawaii, you know, 4-7 with a chance to finish 5-7 with a win over Reno, 5-7 with a win over Reno, you could argue is progress from last year when they finished 5-7 and lost to Reno. So there was still, if they beat Hawaii, there's still a chance on the table where you could have a better year than you did last year, even though not record-wise. It could have been a better season. That's off the table now. A win would help a lot. But, do you think it's fair to compare those two programs in the way that they're going right now? Is this like Reno team for real? Because I know Norvell was getting a lot of the same questions, and people up there weren't completely satisfied with him going into this season. And does this season sort of, is it fair to hold that against Sanchez, or to compare them to compare the two programs?
You know, I guess it's fair just that they're in the same, I mean, obviously they're in the same state. I think with the state of the program, and Tony's been there longer, you know, I don't want to cry too big a foul. I will say there are some advantages at Reno. I mean, a more established program.
Obviously.
You know, it's not an apples to apples comparison, but I certainly think that just, I mean, there's a huge discrepancy in results. It's not like Reno needs this win to get to bowl eligibility, and they've had like a two-win season better. I mean, they've been competitive in almost every game. I mean, even Fresno State, I don't think they scored, or they might have got a field goal, but it was a close game. I mean, UNLV, at the end of the day, still got blown out by New Mexico. So I think it does look pretty bad to juxtapose it. But you can write all that on Saturday. I really believe, I mean, if you play a close game with them, I think that's all you can ask for right now.
Yeah, and it's I'm just looking through their schedule right now. And, yeah, they've been pretty much competitive every week. They've won four in a row. That's got to be tough for UNLV to stack up against that. So, yeah, it would be good. It would be huge for Tony Sanchez to win this game. But, like I said before, just you can't go in and get blown out. That's pretty much the only thing you have to avoid. And that's something UNLV is before at San Diego State. You know, they were getting blown out pretty regularly, so it's not like that's off the table. If Nevada comes in and scores a couple touchdowns early, we could see it get away from them. And then it's just, you know, 3 hours of the TV showing Tony Sanchez on the sideline looking like a dead man walking, and that's not good for him or his job security. So keep the game close. Show that, you know, the programs aren't that far apart, even though the records say they are. And, you know, maybe you'll get through with another year to see if you can turn it around.
All right, well, let's tempt fate here. I think last time we did this, when it was just you and I on the podcast, we struck out. Although I will say I backtracked later in the week in my talking points column and went the other way. But we signed off the podcast the San Jose State week by giving our prediction, what we thought of the game. And I think we both picked UNLV. And, of course, they lost that game 50-37 in another pretty ugly loss looking back. What do you expect this week against Reno? It is Monday, so you have the ability to hedge later in the week and change your opinion. But right now, what do you think that the most likely result of this game is?
I hate UNLV secondary right now. Just the fact that how injured they are, how banged up they are, and they weren't, you know, very good to begin with. That's something I think Nevada can take advantage of, and they probably will. They're going to score points, 35-41 points, like, Nevada 35, UNLV 21, something in that range. Like, I think Rodgers can get the running game going enough where UNLV will put some touchdowns on the board. But defensively, I don't like their chances of stopping Reno.
I'm kind of along the same lines, but not totally. I just feel like the Rebels are going to throw everything they have at this game. They know it all comes down to this. I think they're going to be able to score two, even though Reno's defense has shown signs at times. Hasn't been that consistent. It's just too hard to pick UNLV right now. But I'll say something like comes down to the end, close game, but Reno pulls it out 36-30 or something in that range. I'll say a touchdown, within a touchdown.
What's the over-under for that game?
Don't get posted until later in the week. Oh, okay. So I'm sure if we dug to the deep corners of the internet, we could find one, but they're probably not taking any money anyway.
You said 30.
I said 36-30, so that would be 66.
That's where you think the line would be?
I think it'll be a little shorter than that if I had to guess. I would probably guess probably around there, 63 maybe, 64 or something at the high end. Although I will say that the Hawaii total was 72.5. I would think a small 60s would be my guess.
Okay, I question, like, UNLV with Rodgers, can they keep up in a shootout? Because they're just so run-oriented, and the passing game has such a difficulty when Rodgers is in there. So if Reno gets it up into the mid-30s or into, you know, the 40s, can UNLV keep up with them? I really don't think they can. And I don't think the secondary can match up with them either. So, yeah, I'd say right around that line for me, like 41-21 or 35-21, something like that. Makes sense to me.
All right, well, good news for the Rebels fans, because when we both agreed last time, San Jose State pulled it out, so maybe look for the Rebels to run away with this one. But last regular season game, we'll still be back on the Rebel Room weekly talking basketball as it amps back up. Two games this week, of course. And
I'm sure there'll be some football developments in the offseason.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's true. We're not going to just ignore football. It's definitely a developing story.
Whether it's a coaching search or not, I'm sure there will be stuff to follow in the offseason for football. So,
yep, certainly we'll keep an eye on all that. For Mike, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to The Rebel Room.